Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you hear the latest on the South Shore Line Double Track Project. Katie Anderson reports on reaction from Indiana political expert Andy Downs about the unprecedented scene that unfolded at the U.S. Capitol earlier this week. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Jim Ventura, the CEO of Maya Energy, LLC. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. A precinct committee member caucus to select a new North Township trustee will be held Saturday, January 30th at the Hammond Civic Center. There were nearly 2 years left on former trustee Frank Irvin's term of office when he was sworn in as congressman. Lake County Democratic Party Chairman Jim Weiser tells Lakeshore Public Radio that the Civic Center, with several large meeting rooms, is an ideal place to hold the caucus during the COVID-19 pandemic. Weiser says there could be as many as 140 precinct committee members attending, so the space will allow for plenty of social distancing. He says state Democratic officials have been consulted on this. There are 135 precincts in North Township, which includes Hammond, Whiting, East Chicago, Highland, and Munster. And the 2020 census counted almost 163,000 people. Interested citizens will have until January 27th to apply for the vacancy that will be filled at the January 30th caucus. Weiser says there are, as of Friday, 4 people already interested. They are North Township Community Development Coordinator Tavell Grant, Advisory Board Member Lisa Salinas Montanovich, Highland Town Democratic Chief Marsha Novak, and East Chicago City Clerk Adrian Santos.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
In a historic move, the city of Hammond named its first Black police chief to lead the department. Assistant Chief William Andy Short brings more than 3 decades of experience to the chief role. He was first hired on in 1988 and has risen up the ranks ever since. Short will take the reins of the Hammond Police Department effective immediately following the resignation of current Chief John Doherty from that position. Mayor Thomas McDermott Jr. used his twice-weekly political podcast, Left of Center, to make the announcement Friday morning. Jeff Long, Captain of Patrol, will move to Assistant Chief of Police under Short, and Rob Bunner, currently Lieutenant in Patrol, will be moving into the position of Patrol Captain.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
On Thursday, Governor Eric Holcomb announced that nearly $173 million in federal funding has been granted. The Federal Transit Administration and the Northern Indiana Commuter Transportation District signed the full funding grant agreement. The funds will allow construction to begin on the expansion of the South Shore rail line to a double track, a decades-long priority for the region. A key piece of Governor Holcomb's next-level agenda, the $491 million project will speed passenger rail service between Gary and Michigan City and includes installation of a second mainline track, improvements at 5 stations, expansion of parking lots for over 1,300 new parking spaces, as well as 9 new platforms. The project is expected to more than double existing South Shore Line ridership and reduce travel times for all riders traveling east of Gary. The agreement finalizes the full federal funding for the project through the FTA's Capital Investment Grant.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Indiana lawmakers met for the first time this session to discuss a bill to help shield businesses and other organizations from liability related to COVID-19. The bill would protect businesses, hospitals, schools, and other institutions from being sued by an individual claiming to have been exposed to COVID-19 while on the premises. It provides an exception for cases involving gross negligence or willful misconduct if clear and convincing evidence is provided. Indiana Attorney General-elect Todd Rokita supports the bill and says it will help save taxpayer dollars from unnecessary lawsuits.
And it's still America, at least until the 20th. But because it's still America, anyone can sue. And rarely do those lawsuits get dismissed out of hand. So even if no liability attaches because, in fact, pandemics happen, the fact of the matter is these lawsuits can be costly.
The language in the bill, heard by the Senate Judiciary Committee, is similar to laws already passed in other states, including Utah, Iowa, and Tennessee. As of now, there is no federal COVID-19 liability law in place.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
A dangerous and surreal scene unfolded at the U.S. Capitol Wednesday afternoon as pro-Trump extremists breached the complex, resulting in the death of one of the extremists, a lockdown, and hours of chaos and violence. To get a perspective on this unprecedented event, Indiana Public Broadcasting's Katie Anderson reached out to Andy Downs, director of the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics, to get his initial reactions to the situation and how this could be a turning point in American politics.
Andy Downs, thanks so much for taking time to chat with me today.
Well, I'd like to say it's my pleasure, but obviously it's a tragic reason for us to be talking.
Absolutely. You know, we've been watching some of these events unfold at the U.S. Capitol. Security has been breached and buildings are under lockdown. And as someone who has studied politics for, you know, virtually your whole life, what was your initial reaction when this started happening?
You know, I think for a lot of people, I assumed some folks actually would go to the Capitol. I mean, there was a rally there this morning. The president pretty much encouraged them to go. We as a people are more than happy to get together and to express our opinions. And why wouldn't we expect some folks to go to the Capitol and to express their position on the issues? That should not have surprised anybody. For me, the first images were when I began to get a little bit worried, because these were not people who were just stopping at the normal security barriers. They were walking up to the Capitol building. It didn't take long for them to have a large mass of people trying to get into the Capitol building. So it very quickly went from something that I think a lot of us would expect to see to something that I think most of us would imagine never could have been.
Is there any kind of precedent to this?
You know, you think about this summer and all of the protests that happened, most of them obviously peaceful, but some that did get violent. We did not see anything like this. And because the Capitol security and others took a rather passive approach initially, there will now be some great difficulty in trying to get people removed from the building. We don't see these sorts of things. Think about the Red for Ed gatherings down in Indianapolis from last session. Think about basically every sort of gathering that we see, rarely does it become something like this that is unbelievably shocking.
And as journalists and as scholars, we know that language and word choice matters. We're seeing people call these people protesters, rioters. Some people are even calling it terrorism. But just from what we're seeing right now, how would you define this?
It's interesting. The language that is being used is quickly moving to coup, terrorist, traitor, those sorts of things are coming up much, much faster or much more frequently than we might have expected them to. If you've been watching, for example, Fox or Newsmax or others like that, there have been plenty of people there who very quickly said, this is not the way we're supposed to do this. So these actions are being condemned pretty much from the right and the left. We've heard from a couple of legislators, Republican legislators, who, for example, have said this should end the objections right now because this is an attempt to take over the country. The objections should end at this moment. When we get back into session, we should take care of this in very fast order. But this is unprecedented, as we have said before. The language is very quickly becoming much more accurate, I would argue, in describing what's happening than we might have expected it to, because we are seeing both the left and right use that sort of language.
We know it's a rapidly evolving and changing situation, but what do you think the outcome of this might be? How might our world be different after the events at the Capitol today?
We're definitely going to be living in a different era. You know, we've already heard from some folks overseas who have said, if this were happening in our country, you would be condemning us. We have heard people say they would never expect to see this in the United States. And at the same time, we have to remember this is happening in real time. So, for example, the people who saw footage of the initial individuals walking to the chamber floors, in some respects, they looked like a tourist group walking through the chamber. You know, they weren't carrying guns. They weren't rattling sabers and stomping. They were just processing like you would expect folks to. So you can sort of understand if there was, say, a Capitol guard standing inside the building who just happened to see some people walking in, might be thinking that this is unusual, but not something that's out of the, you know, realm of possibilities. So when these things happen in real time, for us to get a more accurate understanding or to have the language shift as quickly as it did is, I think, very, very interesting. And I think it's also indicative of the fact that we already knew we were in a different era because of the pandemic, because of the rhetoric that's been used for quite some time now and the obvious partisanship that exists in the world right now. I think we have an opportunity here. And that's the question for me. Will we take the opportunity? The opportunity is to actually realize there are things that unite us. There are things we can do together. And instead of having constant gridlock, actually having elected officials who are trying to get things done on which they agree and then not do things they don't agree on. That's the way this has worked for a long time. Maybe this is going to be the thing that pushes us back into cooperation. Unfortunately, it also may be the thing that just drives us further apart.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Jim Ventura, the CEO of Meyer Energy, LLC.
You'll see some work underway on a section of the 2700 block of West 35th Avenue in Gary that will soon, at least by the end of the year, the hopes are, to house a 165,000 square foot facility that will better process Northwest Indiana's solid waste. With us to talk more about the project is the CEO of Maya Energy LLC, Jim Ventura. And Jim, thanks for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Hi, Chris. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, tell us a little bit first about what Maya Energy LLC is all about and the process that you all went through to come up with the idea of creating a way to better process the solid waste that Northwest Indiana residents and businesses generate.
Okay. Well, thank you, Chris. Real quickly, Maya Energy is a LLC that we put together in 2015 for the mission of being able to responsibly be able to recycle waste in a manner that was effective and efficient and avoid the waste going to our landfill, which affects the greenhouse gases. With that said, we formed a company. We moved through a process in Gary where we secured 35 acres off Grant Street and 35th Avenue in Gary, Indiana. Mm-hmm. The process took a long time, it took several years, because we have to go through local zoning notices and so forth, council meetings, public hearings. So it was a very, very complicated, very detailed process that we went through, and we completed it, and I'm glad that we're here today.
I understand that it's the same general area, at least not far away, as to where Lake County Solid Waste Management District's composting site's located out there. They're along 35th and Grant. So it's kind of become an environmentally a processing area, hasn't it?
Exactly, and we look forward to working with the Lake County Solid Waste because I know they do the leaf collection, and we're going to be having, you know, what we call wood waste branches and so forth. So we looking forward to working with them also.
Now, I understand that My Energy LLC is going to use some of the latest state-of-the-art technology to be able to better process this waste that you're bringing in. First off, will you talk a little bit about what the processes will be, as well as how the collection process is going to be able to get the communities to bring this material in?
Sure. First of all, the technology has really come a long way in the last 7 years, recycling process. So we are using a company out of San Francisco, California, called the CP Group. They've been around for a long time. They have actually put in their system in over 400 material recovery facilities worldwide. So we visited the plant. We liked the equipment. We liked the company. So we partnered with them to bring in the technology to our facility. The technology they have, We'll use the latest recycling technology to be able to take out the paper, plastic, and cardboard. Municipal solid waste, we will use things like optical sorters that shoots a beam and a light at different types of plastic bottles, and it separates them into 2D, 3D, and so forth. Mm-hmm. We also are looking right now, we're looking very closely into using the latest, which is robotics, to be able to take a wood to be able to separate it. And these robotic arms pick the waste off a conveyor. They can do probably 4,000 picks a minute. Unbelievable. You know, six times more than a human can do it. So we're looking at that also. And we're also looking at safeguards with the COVID right now, how to be able to have a facility that safeguards the workers, kind of make sure that they don't handle the waste too much, and again, protects them and protects their health.
Speaking of staff members, how many people do you hope eventually the facility will be able to have out there as employees to help the city of Gary in particular?
Now, Chris, we're looking at, to start off, we're looking at probably about 55 to 65 full-time employees. We're looking at another 40 ancillary jobs, those are like trucking and so forth. And then total, I would say over the next couple of years, looking at about 125 full-time employees. Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that some of the initial information that's come out here when My Energy LLC was formed talks about the material that you want to collect and you want to be able to process. And that includes both municipal solid waste, which people basically consider trash or garbage, I guess is the old-fashioned term for it, but also construction and demolition debris. For people that are not familiar with what that is, tell us about that and how you're hoping that the facility that you're building out there in Gary is going to be able to handle that and get that off to different uses.
Yes. So, Chris, what we're going to do is we're going to have several lines. We're going to have two dedicated lines strictly for municipal solid waste in the facility, and we're going to have one line dedicated to the separation of the C&D waste, which is construction and demolition debris, which comes from abandoned houses, new housing, construction, any waste that comes out of there. We will take it and we will separate wood, we will separate drywall and so forth, and concrete, and we will recycle it back into the industry.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got very experienced people to do this. Our superintendent has had over 30 years in the waste business. He's ran huge facilities, so we've got a good team to do it, and we've got a lot of interested cities and independent haulers interested in bringing us the waste.
Has the opportunity to be able to locate the facility in Gary been to your all advantage, especially since we know that the city administration wants to deal with the abandoned houses, and there are unfortunately so many of them in the city of Gary, and then there's been some work, I know, to be able to process some of the waste from these abandoned houses, but there's probably a lot more to come in.
Absolutely. I had a conference call with the mayor a couple of weeks ago and his economic development director. They went real well, and we did discuss the C&D problem, the abandoned houses in Gary. And we're looking to sit with the city of Gary in the next couple of weeks to try to work out a solution. And Maya is, we told him, Mayor, we're here to help work with the city to make it possible to be able to knock these houses, recycle them, and so forth, and work closely with the city of Gary. It was a very positive conversation.
I know that there are other organizations and businesses in Gary that are now dealing with handling solid waste. Carmu's Lime up there off Lake Michigan is also using their own processes that they've set up to be able to bring solid waste in, municipal solid waste in particular, and turn that into processes. What are you hoping that My Energy LLC can do that might be a little different?
Well, First of all, I know Camus. I've been to the facility there. What they basically do, they take a lot of the hazardous oils, the sludges, okay, where we deal with strictly municipal solid waste, construction, demolition, debris. We're different than what they do, and they process it right there in Camus, because Camus, they own 50% of Vexor, who does all the processing for them. So we're different. We have a different market. And right now, like I said, Chris, we've got such an overwhelming support from haulers. We're strategically located in the right position. Over 10 to 12,000 tons of municipal solid waste go right through the area into the landfill in Union County.
What kind of support? You mentioned about City Hall and what the city administration wants to do to be able to see you folks get started here. What other support have you gotten, perhaps from the area construction and the unions that are going to help out in getting the facility built?
Well, it's been very positive. I mean the people in the waste industry, we've met with them, and you know, we were going to do a groundbreaking back in December, but the COVID issue stopped us. And when we sent out the flyers, we had overwhelming response. People were going to come to the dinner, but unfortunately, like I said, we had to cancel it because of COVID. But we're moving forward. We've got a complete support of waste. We've got letters of intent already. We've got contracts already signed, so we've got overwhelming support.
What kind of opportunities have you had since the first word of putting the process in place to be able to get the facility built and all? What kind of support have you gotten in talking with neighbors, so to speak, there along 35th Avenue and others that live in that side of Gary as to what you're planning to do and how to deal with their concerns?
Well, you know, when we went through the process, that was all addressed through the state permitting, and we had all the public hearings. You know, they were all over the newspaper. Some of the things that were said were not true. Some of the stuff that, you know, that were reported wasn't accurate. But I never took the position of trying to say things or I don't want to be adversarial. My energy is here to work with the mayor, the city of Gary, Lake County, because this is definitely going to create an impact, a positive impact. The plant is going to be a state-of-the-art, beautiful facility. We have indoor tippers, the only ones in the country, indoor, complete and closed. So we've done everything. We've gone through the process. It's been very detailed. We've had, neighbors give their comments to the state. They reviewed everything we were doing closely. They were really, really honest about, being very, very careful how we built this facility, make sure we take everything into account. And we did that. And again, everything worked out good. We got our permits and we're happy.
Now, Jim, if you will, bring us up to date with how the project is coming along. What stages are you in right now? And folks that come by the neighborhood there on West 35th Avenue are likely to see go up here in the months ahead? And when also do you hope to have the facility open for business, so to speak, for processing the solid waste?
Yes. What we're doing right now is, Chris, we're working with the city of Gary. They have a engineering company they work with called Robertson Engineering. We're working closely with our engineers with Robertson Engineering. We're doing soil borings on 35th Avenue. We just got it done yesterday. We've done soil borings on the land itself, the 35 acres. We're waiting for the results. Once we get those results, we're going to submit to a site plan review committee through zoning and planning in the fire department, and we're going to go over to the whole construction that we're going to do out there. And we're looking to get our first permit, actually, so we can put in a culvert, and we're going to put in the entrance to the facility that will allow us now to start bringing in trucks, crushed rock, dirt, and start elevating the property. That will happen within the next, I would say, 30 to 60 days. We're going to be staking out the property pretty soon. They will see stakes out there. We're working on the foundation designs, get them approved by the city. And I would say by March, toward the end of March, maybe April, you're going to start seeing the foundation of the building go up. Mm-hmm. And we'll hopefully be open by the end of the year.
Is that a property out there, or land out there, I should say, that was maybe at one time was zoned for agricultural purposes and then got changed over into industrial and commercial purposes? And so it never really was set up to be more than just farmland out there? That's why you have to go through the process of being able to put more roads and the like in to get in off 35th Avenue, to be ready for the truck traffic that'll have to come out there.
Yeah, definitely. So that's why what we did was a traffic study before we started the project. And what we're basically doing with the city, when we get together with them, we're going to talk about 35th. We've got money in the budget. Obviously, we're trying to get some funds from the state, hopefully a matching fund to be able to improve 35th Avenue, obviously, for our facility being open.
Now, you mentioned that you're aiming toward the end of 2021. Are you looking forward to having a facility out there and ready to go to be able to better process what people are throwing away, what businesses are throwing away these days?
Yes, we're looking. We're definitely working hard to try to get there by the end of the year to be fully open and operational of 2021.
Jim Ventura is the CEO of Maya Energy LLC. They are in the process of getting ready to build a 165,000 square foot solid waste processing facility on the west edge of Gary at West 35th Avenue near Grant Street, and the plan to be in open for business or later this year is the plan right now. And Mr. Ventura, thank you for being with us today to talk about the project.
Chris, thank you for having me. Anytime, call me.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by BenSound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.